He was the first person I met in the first place I had ever lived that was not Southern California. When my dad and I pulled up our Ryder moving truck to our new apartment at Princeton Theological Seminary, we were greeted by a guy with a big, broad smile and a Milwaukee Bucks t-shirt. And he walked up and extended his hand and he said, "Hey, I'm Buck." And I thought, oh, well, that's kind of funny, you know, his name's Buck, and there's the Bucks t-shirt. And I said, "Oh, it's nice to meet you, Buck. You must be from Milwaukee." And he said, "No, I'm from Texas." And then he proceeded to help my dad and I unload that moving truck that had just made the almost 3,000-mile journey to our new home. Buck had recently arrived there himself with his wife, Michelle. They met at the University of Texas in the LBJ School of Public Affairs, where they were both master's students. And Buck was a star prize student at LBJ. His focus of study was on public policy in regards to healthcare, the dangers of tobacco use privately and in public spaces, and the need and the wisdom for us as a nation to consider and to enact universal health care for all people. But as I got to know Buck, I learned that his passion for justice and peacemaking went way back into his childhood. He just seemed to have a natural knack and desire to be a peacemaker, to be an advocate for justice for all people. And he also was a natural bridge builder. He could find ways to bring people together who would normally be at odds. And it was life-giving to be around Buck. I didn't know until about 6 weeks into our life in Princeton that Buck was also suffering from a recurrence of Hodgkin's disease, and that he had already had one bone marrow transplant in his younger years in Texas, and that it was 2 weeks before he and Michelle arrived in Princeton that he got the news that the cancer had come back. And within the next year and a half, he would have a second bone marrow transplant and go through multiple seasons of treatment. And yet through all of that, he was a marvel. Because that engaging, positive, peace-giving spirit continued to shine through him in the ways that he could make us laugh, in the ways that he was always asking how you were doing. He was always trying to find new ways to work for justice and for equality, not just for people on the seminary campus or in the town of Princeton, but he was part of doing work with people who were working on a national level to try and enact peace, to try and bring that justice that we're all created for. It indeed continued to be life-giving to be in Buck's presence, even as he was fighting for his life and embracing his mortality in his 20s. And at times, it made me wonder, is this just a really, really overextended case of denial? I mean, is it a highly attuned defense mechanism to stave off what could be his inevitable reality? Was it some kind of fear of confrontation of his mortality that led him to avoid conflict and try and maintain the peace? No. What I was witnessing in Buck, in a way that up to that point in my life I had never witnessed or experienced, was the embodiment, the radiance, the power of shalom. That ancient Hebraic sense of peace that goes far beyond this. The peace signs that we do extend to each other as a way to communicate peace. But shalom is so much more holistic. It encompasses all of life. It embraces the pain and the pleasure. It embraces the challenges and the celebrations, the griefs and the joys, the brokenness and the blessedness, and sees it in such a way that it's all of one piece. Shalom is that enacting of all of those disparate parts of ourselves and our lives and our culture coming together and being integrated into one mosaic, one powerful expression of the divine presence. That's what I experienced in Buck's presence. It's the peace that embraces death because it's actually stronger than death. It's the peace that surpasses our understanding or comprehension and also supersedes diagnoses. This is a peace that is less about the absence of conflict and more about the presence of love and acceptance. It's not merely peace for a time or peace for a certain time, but as John F. Kennedy once said, a peace for all time. And Jesus says in our passage for this morning that we are blessed as peacemakers. So what might it mean in the sense of shalom to be a peacemaker? Sometimes it's helpful to pay attention to the details in these short little sayings. And one thing that I noticed is that it doesn't say, blessed are the peacekeepers. Blessed are the referees. Although I think referees are blessed. And the sense isn't so much that peacekeepers aren't blessed, but that Jesus is talking about something that perhaps goes deeper and broader and is more holistic and universal than just being a referee. Although at times, life calls us into that situation, and we've got to keep two kids from killing each other. Or we've got to keep two adults from killing each other. Whatever it might be, there are those times where we're called to be peacekeepers. But I wonder if a peacemaker, in the sense that Jesus is talking about, is one who's able to seemingly naturally walk through life and create a presence of peace. And I wonder if that peacemaking is able to happen, that peacemaker is able to do that work and create that presence of peace because that presence of peace has already been recognized and integrated within themselves. Unifying those disparate parts of self into a more complete whole. A peace that is embodied and given freely to others because it's already been embraced and received deep within. And I wonder then if in that sense one can be a peacemaker in any and every situation in life, in whatever life might throw our way, even when we have to serve as a referee. Because peace engages conflict, not with force, but with faith. That shalom can then create in those moments of conflict peace, because the peacemaker knows intuitively that the foundation for that peace is already present. The presence, capital P, is already present by the Spirit in us, through us. Like we've seen with all of these Beatitudes, Jesus isn't telling us anything new, but is inviting us to discover and rediscover something that's already there. And maybe that's the gift and the blessing of the peacemaker, is to recognize that underneath the hatred, there are seeds for connection and harmony. That beyond all of that conflict that terrifies us, there is the possibility and the presence that can bring togetherness. Which reminds me of one of my family's favorite movies. What About Bob? Some of you are laughing with that sense of familiarity, that brilliant cinematic masterpiece. Bill Murray plays Bob, a guy who describes himself to his latest therapist as a guy who has problems. And his therapist, Dr. Leo Marvin, played brilliantly by Richard Dreyfuss, is the highly confident and fairly self-seeking helper for Bob. And Bob gets so attached instantly to Leo that he eventually finds out that he's vacationing at Lake Winnipesaukee for a month and follows the family up there. And Leo is trying to get Bob out of his hair and get some peace and quiet, and Bob keeps reappearing and engaging with his family and endearing himself to his family. Well, eventually a storm hits one night, and the family talks Leo in very begrudgingly into allowing Bob to spend the night. And so Bob is bunking up for the night with Leo's son, Sigmund. For Sigmund Freud. And so Bob and Siggy are in the bedroom and they're having a slumber party and they're bouncing up and down on the beds and it's 1:30 in the morning and Leo has to get up early to be on Good Morning America and is very stressed out. And he comes into the room and he says, "What are you doing? What's going on in here?" And they said, "Well, sorry, we were just enjoying ourselves." And he says, "Gosh, what is this, an asylum? All I need is some peace and quiet." And Bob and Siggy are sitting there on the bed, and they get these sly smiles on their faces, and Siggy said, "Okay, I'll be quiet." And then Bob says, "And I'll be peace." And then they burst into laughter, and Leo fumes off back to his bedroom. Buck eventually fully embraced his mortality at age 28. And yet, right up to his dying day, he continued to ask the other person, "How are you doing? What's going on in your life? How can I be praying for you? Is there any way I can help you?" Even in the hospital room on his deathbed, our last conversation started like this. He continued to be a beacon of that shalom, a vessel of that peace that not only advocates for others, but brings people together into a greater wholeness. I think of my friend often. I'm actually wearing one of his shirts. Because as he passed on and Michelle was going through his things, I think I had made some sort of reference to how sharp he looked one day. And so here she comes over to our apartment one day with a half dozen dress shirts that are still in great shape. And we were about the same size. And so actually, there are many Sundays when I'm standing up here that Buck is with me in shirt as well as in spirit. But I feel honored because in that way, in spirit, I feel like maybe some of that peacemaking can rub off on me and maybe could emanate out of these fabrics and into my own faith and maybe out of these faltering words and into our collective ears and minds and hearts and spirits. And I wonder, how might I be peace today? Unlike Bob and Siggy, it doesn't mean having to be quiet. But each of us is created in our own unique way to be peace, to be peacemakers, and not only peacekeepers. As a community, we have a couple of opportunities to engage more fully in peacemaking. Josh mentioned one of them that you'll be hearing more about later in the service, the Caravan 2019 trip to New Mexico, where our students will be learning and engaging with Native peoples, with immigrants, and growing in their understanding and experience of what it means to be a peacemaker. We've also started a relationship with the Pacifica Rose Muslim community. And we've had an experience called Tea and Conversation that happened a few weeks ago, where over 24 of us gathered together amidst our differences of tradition to find the areas of commonality, the places where our stories resonate and connect together. And our next Tea and Conversation that's coming up will be on, you guessed it, peacemaking. What does it look like for people of different traditions, different backgrounds, facing many of the same challenges? How do we learn how to more fully embody peace to each other, as well as to others in our community? Friends, the opportunity is there with each heartbeat and with each breath. How will you be peace today? How will you be peace tomorrow? How will you be peace this week? How can we be peace? Amen.